This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 24.
What made me look into real estate is that I always wanted to do business in some way, shape, or form. I wasn't sure how. So when I got stationed in Los Angeles, I got exposed to a lot of people that were in the business. And the common denominator of those business owners that had millions of dollars was they owned some type of real estate. Parking garages, parking lots, which, you know, downtown LA, if you own a parking lot, I mean, the overhead is crazy.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, everybody. So in this episode, I interviewed Anthony Ritchie. And we talked about his humble beginnings from where he started off before he joined the Navy to where he is now. So recently selected for Chief Petty Officer, we'll talk about that a little bit in the episode. But we're going to talk about how Anthony actually got started on his journey to financial independence through real estate. It's going to be pretty awesome. You guys are really going to enjoy this one. Check it out. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below. All right. Hey, how's it going, everybody? Today, we have Anthony Ritchie on with us, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his story and his journey with personal finance. I'm pretty excited to have him on here. As a matter of fact, I was a guest on his podcast a couple weeks ago, and we had some great conversation. We want to continue that here. And I'm looking forward to talking with him about his journey in personal finance and what he's currently doing in real estate. He's doing some pretty big things, and he's got a lot of great things going on for him. Also active duty in the Navy, just like me. And he just recently selected for Chief Petty Officer, and he can talk a little bit about that as well. This is going to be a really exciting episode, guys. So, hey, Anthony, pleasure having you here. Thanks for joining me today.
Awesome. I really appreciate doing this with you. I know me and you, we talked 30 minutes before we even got into the episode. So me and you definitely could talk all day long when it comes to finances, stocks, all the above. So I really appreciate you inviting me to do this episode with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to start things off. The way I like to ask everybody the same question is, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and share your story with us?
Born in the Bronx, raised half my life in the South between North Carolina and Virginia. That's where I ended up joining the Navy. Was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia on a small boy. For those of you that don't know, that's like on a destroyer. And got stationed in Los Angeles where I was in recruiting duty. And then I came back to the East Coast in Norfolk to be stationed on Truman. I'll be 30 in about 9 days. So that'd be pretty cool because I'm looking forward to my 30s and seeing how that's going to go for me professionally and family-wise. Yeah, like you just said, I just got selected for chief, waiting on my officer results to see how that goes. So just like you, Mike, definitely want to go that route, the 6410 route for retirement. I do invest in real estate. Currently, I have 5 units in Norfolk, Virginia, and Portsmouth, Virginia, a triplex and a duplex. Also have a podcast called Rich State of Mind. And we also have stocks in Tesla, Bitcoin, Delta, Carnival. Oh, Apple. How could I forget that one? And so that's pretty much sums it up. I mean, throughout this episode, I'm pretty sure we'll go into details, but the main goal is to just really provide passive income as much as possible, because you and I both know that we won't be in the Navy forever. And I would like to have some type of freedom. I think we've sacrificed enough in our careers and woken up enough early days and had enough late nights to where we deserve a nice retirement. So that's the plan.
All right. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I want to talk a little bit about your time in the Navy, because you said you want to do something similar to what I did, right? And that's go the officer route. And for those that are listening that aren't familiar with this, when he said 6410, that is the designator, right? So the officer designation for a limited duty officer, an administrative limited duty officer, which is what I currently do in the Navy. So recently, Anthony was just selected for Chief Petty Officer, which in the Navy is a significant milestone. So he's going through a transition with that, right? To go from his transition from E6 to E7. And all at the same time, he's got an officer application in right now, waiting for those results to come out. Hoping to see your name on the list. That'll be pretty awesome. You know, with everything that you're doing, you know, you've got the right mindset to be in the wardroom as an officer and go in there and crush it. And it definitely seems like you take care of your sailors. And that's like the big thing that's going to help you succeed as an officer and as a chief. So either route you go, it's going to be a good path for you, I think. And so you're getting ready to turn 30. It's pretty funny because I was around the same age when I started going through this whole program and getting selected for it to be 30 years old, you know, as an ensign in the wardroom and everyone else around you that's the same rank or pay grade is in their young 20s. But that's your opportunity to also mentor them. So, but anyway, I want to go too off topic, right? Because we're going to talk about your personal finance journey and also everything that you've done to get to where you're at. So I'm really excited about this. So you said right now you have a triplex and a duplex. You also invest in stocks, right? Such as Tesla, Apple. So some of those big blue chip stocks. And you're also investing in some cryptocurrency because you said you invest in Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, Bitcoin. And I forgot to say Dogecoin. Dogecoin is kind of like my luck of the Irish.
Okay.
If it hits, then I'll be a millionaire.
Yeah, but that's
I just need to be a penny.
Fingers crossed, actually. Penny stock.
Yeah, yeah. Less than a penny. It's like a third of a penny.
All right. Well, fingers crossed for you that something happens with Dogecoin and we'll see. All right. So I want to dive a little bit into your actual journey to personal financial freedom. So what drove you to start this journey?
So kind of a little bit of back, it goes back to when I was growing up, humbling beginnings for me growing up. When I became 18 and decided to join the Navy, I was just thinking like, okay, there's got to be a better way than how I came up and lived. How are people doing it? You know, and I didn't understand. You don't understand how far $50,000 a year can go until you actually make it and then also have kids of your own and also have a significant other or spouse to take care of. It was when you kind of start to realize, okay, this is how much and how far I can do with this amount of resources. So I joined the Navy, started picking up rank, had my son, started getting BH. And as I was going through the motions of trying to take care of my family, I realized I could see some of the pitfalls that my parents had made and how hard it is and how difficult it is, especially if you have multiple kids to take care of a family. So I was like, okay, I have enough to take care of a family, but I have to make right decisions. And so I started reading and looking up different ways I started off with trying to figure out how to make more money, but I was actually looking in the wrong direction. What I was supposed to be doing was figuring out how to be a better steward of my money. And so that's how I stumbled across Dave Ramsey. And so Dave Ramsey was really big on, you know, hey, you can make 40 grand a year, but you'd be surprised at what you could do with 40 grand a year if you spend it wisely and don't live above your means. So that was a conversation I had to have with my ex-wife and his son's mother where, hey, look, this is where we're at right now. We cannot act like we make 90, we make 60. Okay, with this 60 grand, and we have $50,000 worth of debt as well. So with the 60 grand, how are we going to knock off the $50,000 of debt and still live a comfortable lifestyle? So we knocked off subscriptions. I actually sold her car and she started driving my car and I bought a hoopty for like $1,600. And then I put 3 grand into that car and got it pretty much driving like it was a brand new car. So I reduced my debt from selling her car by like 15 grand. Just finding different ways to reduce the liabilities and expenses so that it was almost like I was giving ourselves a raise. My income didn't change. And so I think in order to reach that financial success that a lot of people want to meet, they have to start looking at what they have already right now, because you can't invest like you really want to if you're bleeding from within, between credit cards, between subscriptions, between car notes, or being house poor. So it's really just looking in within yourself first. And that took me 2.5 years to become debt free and a lot of sacrifices, but I had no regrets from it. And I was able to still live a comfortable lifestyle, but I could not compare myself to what other people were doing. And that's the biggest thing that I think a lot of people run into is they compare, okay, I'm 30 And the people that are 30 years old, this is what they're doing. They're buying a nice house and they got a nice car. And look at me right now. I think when you take that out the picture, worried about what you look like and what your other people that you know are doing, it allows you to focus more and hone in more on what your goal is, because this is your journey. It's not nobody else's.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. I mean, it sounds very similar to what I did to get out of debt as well. My wife and I, we found Dave Ramsey, and that was the route that we went, right? Certain things that you don't need. So, you know, you were talking about how you canceled subscriptions. You sold her car, right? And then bought a hoopty. And just the amount of money that you were able to save, it wasn't that you were bringing in more income, but you were spending less, right? So you're able to find dollars that were being misused or misaligned to where they should really be going, and find a new home for it to make that work. That is definitely 100% the right way to go to get out of debt. Of course, the first thing you're gonna do is try to find more income, right? That's what everybody does. You wanna, hey, I gotta find a way to increase my income. But a lot of times there's little changes you can make in your life that will help not so much raise your income, but you know, you're gonna find more money that you can use more wisely. Now I'm actually doing that right now with refinancing my house to get a lower rate. And it's going to save me a couple $100 a month. And, you know, that's the way I look at it is that's, you know, $225 that I didn't have before that I now have that can go towards something else. I can invest it into something or whatever, you know, put it into savings, put it into a vacation fund if we want to go out, you know, and when all this pandemic stuff is over and we want to take a trip off the island since we're stuck here on an island, that's the right way to go. So you definitely did it the right way. So after you got rid of this $50,000 in debt, what did you start doing with that money that you were saving?
So that's when we started to build up our, I guess we were doing the Dave Ramsey baby steps. That's when we started to really build up the emergency fund even higher. And then I hiked up my 401k, not 401k, TSP contributions up to like between 15 and 18% is what I hiked it up to. And so that was my main focus. Around this time too, I was on back-to-back deployments. So not much investing in real estate going on at that time, because I was never really home to even take the time to even, I didn't want to rush it either, because at this point it was going to be my first property I was going to ever buy. And I did not want to rush it, because I heard that's a mistake a lot of people make. They may rush, and then before you know it, I'm on deployment. And then some things that I missed and did not pay attention to, now they're falling to, you know, pieces while I'm on overseas.
Yeah. So sometimes for those of us on active duty, that can be the difficult part, right? When you're deployed and you're trying to figure out what to do with your finances, sometimes, especially after you've been cooped up on a ship for a little while, you'll go hit a Liberty port and you just be like, oh, I spent a little more than I intended to. So, yeah. But also deployment's a good opportunity to save some money too. When you were out, I'm just curious, did you ever do the savings deposit program that they have when you're deployed?
We weren't in either one of the spots for too long. Well, the first deployment, we were not in the area long enough to get it. The second time we were, but I already had my 10 grand actually. Like I already had over 10 grand saved up. So I was like, there's no point. Plus I didn't like the fact that you don't get your money until like 4 months later. So I was like,
Well, that's my choice. So it's 90 days after you get back, you can leave it in there and let it keep gaining the interest.
Yeah.
So I did it that way too. So it was a nice little post-deployment surprise. But, you know, now that I look back at it, and I asked you this for a reason, right? Because now that when I look back at it, that money could have made better interest or better returns if I would have just invested it into index funds, ETFs, or even into individual stocks if I was, you know, doing my research properly. So I just looked at this as this is a pretty good, you know, way to get a couple hundred extra bucks by putting, you know, a couple thousand into it and not realizing that money could have been used elsewhere and made a better return. So sometimes you get caught up by the shiny objects. Now you said you buy Tesla, Apple, you buy Bitcoin. So stocks is one thing, but what made you decide to get into cryptocurrency?
So Bitcoin, it's kind of maybe a regret buy. I don't know, because I wish I bought it in 2012. And so
y'all did.
if I just had an idea, just put $300 into it. But so I bought it now, or I bought it about a few months ago, because I saw that it was projected to still go up, which when I bought it, it was $12,000, and now it's like 18.
Yeah, I think it's actually sitting at 19 right now.
19 now?
At the end of the week, yeah.
So yeah, so it's made $7,000 in like the last, I think, 40 days, which is crazy. I'm starting to think that it's going to really be this generation's or this century's version of gold. to be honest, being that we don't have the gold standard anymore. But so I did that, did my research on that, and I saw you know the opportunity for some profit with Tesla, with Elon Musk making the strides that he's doing with the autopilot car, the energy, the battery that he built, so you can have a cheaper car, so more people can afford the Tesla. Doesn't seem like there's nothing much slowing Tesla down right now. Still, I don't like buying into just one. I don't like putting all my stock into just one company though, because anything can happen. But it seems like he can do no wrong right now. Apple people are just fanatics for Apple, so it's kind of a,
as we can see by your earbuds.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a plug and play. People, I always joke to people at my job, like they'll have this $2,000 iMac laptop and they only use it to watch DVDs. And I'm like, you have no idea like the capabilities of what that laptop could really do. But it's just people will buy just for the freaking name. And so when you have people that loyal to a brand that they will buy it just because of his brand, it's kind of, you know, and they can come out with the same phone every year and the only thing they change is just the camera. It's almost sad, but you know, it's great marketing on Apple. You can't blame Apple for great marketing. So
yeah, I'm a Windows and a Samsung user right now, but I'm actually closely looking at switching over to get the MacBook Pro when that 16-inch comes out with the A9 or whatever it is, or M. And because everybody I know that has the 13-inch one, they just swear by it with how phenomenal it is. So I know if I do get that, then I'll wind up switching back to an iPhone just because of how it integrates, right? So I've been off the Apple train for a while. I think the last iPhone I had was a 6, and I switched over to Galaxy and haven't really looked back. But you know, just with how easy it integrates with each other, and with what I'm doing with content creation, the Mac is supposedly much better for the stuff that I'm doing. So
it is convenient.
That's why I'm looking. Yeah, I'm seriously looking into it. So you're probably a MacBook user, aren't you?
So I am, because of I like the camera on the Mac. And then I also like the processing is pretty great, but I am a Microsoft Word and Excel user. I love Excel and I love Microsoft, the Office portion of it. So I'm kind of torn. Like my laptop, I use Windows. So yeah, I'm kind of torn right now. Once, if Apple could come out with something, you know, equal to that, which I doubt it because that's Microsoft's baby, then I'll completely convert. But I do find it very convenient. Like when I do my interviews on Zoom, I can convert my videos to MP4 and I can airdrop them to my phone and I can upload everything from my phone to straight to YouTube. So it's kind of convenient.
Yeah, that is really convenient. And the thing with that though, you know, you can still, even if you had to, you can run Windows on a Mac.
You know, I heard, yes. Yeah, you just, I did hear about
run
that, that
program. You can run the Windows on there and still have your Word and Outlook and all that good stuff and Excel. But yeah, they're very convenient machines from what I understand, and they're pretty much plug and play. You open up and you go. Like my current setup with my laptop and everything, like I had to have this thing like decked out just to make it work for what I use it for, right? So I had to upgrade the hard drive, I had to upgrade everything. So I like the fact that it's more plug and play with the Mac. So you know, we'll see. We'll check it out in the future. I'm just, you know, right now I'm more focused on other things and putting my money into other things. So now, besides the stocks and everything, I just touched on it briefly. You said you have a triplex and a duplex out there in Virginia. So what made you want to start buying real estate? And by doing that, how has the journey with real estate been for you?
Okay, so what made me look into real estate, that I always wanted to do business in some way, shape, or form. I wasn't sure how. So when I got stationed in Los Angeles, I got exposed to a lot of people that were in the business. And the common denominator of those business owners that had millions of dollars was they owned some type of real estate. Parking garages, parking lots, which, you know, downtown LA, if you own a parking lot, I mean, the overhead is crazy. I mean, the overhead is light. All you have to worry about is one person collecting money. You charge 20 people, which you probably have an average of 5,000 to 10,000 people that goes in the parking lot. And you just got to make sure the white stripes are fresh. So
that's easy maintenance right there.
Very easy maintenance. The parking lot itself is $1.5 million, but you'll get your money back very shortly. And then also multifamilies in the area, which is tons of multifamilies in the Los Angeles area. and there's tons of traffic as far as everybody's coming to LA for whatever reason. So Airbnb is booming over there. Short-term lease or long-term leasing is booming. Depending on, I know the thing that kind of gets people not wanting to buy out there because it's expensive, but you could start in South Central Los Angeles and get a fourplex. Well, back then you could have got a fourplex for like 500 grand. Now it's probably like 800. Like the equity shot up really crazy in the last few years. But that's what kind of got me into, okay, real estate, passive income, and the equity. You know, I saw my friend, he amassed 90 grand in equity in 7 months off of his fourplex. And so I was like, okay, great. This guy made 90 grand just sitting here. And he bought it with his VA loan. He did a house hack. That was the first house hack I ever witnessed as well.
So was that, did he force the appreciation? So he bought it and, you know, just did a bunch of repairs and was able to raise rent and, or was it, you know, was it more of a fixer upper that he just fixed up and he did like the Burr method? Like how do you get the 90 grand in equity?
So he did do renovations and it was a fixer upper as far as modernizing it. He had to modernize it. But the reason why it went up so much in equity was because this is around the time, this is like 2014, 2015. So this is when the real estate market started to climb back up.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Right on.
So timing on his part too.
Yeah. sometimes timing's everything, right? Bitcoin.
Yes.
Tesla. Yeah.
I know. Right. Exactly. So with realizing that this is another first class, just like me.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, well I could do this. And so I came back to Virginia. I started looking at different areas is where I would be, you know, best fit my money. And so that's when I was like, okay, I'm gonna do what he did. And I'm gonna use my VA loan and house hack. And I was able to find a triplex. Now it was a process because it's harder to find deals on the MLS than it is if you find off-market deals. So it took me about 4 months to find this deal. The triplex right now is worth 177. Probably if I factored in the fact that I just put about $3,000 into the three bedrooms, probably worth about 182, but I bought it for 139 at the time. So going on a year and a half ago. So I was looking for a good deal and I was looking for a rent that I can increase. I think when it comes to multifamily, that's the biggest thing. So for the triplex at the time, three bedroom was 900, but you could go up to 1150 for the three bedroom in that area. So I was like, okay, room for growth. The two bedroom at the time was only being rented out for 600, but I can go for 750 in that area. So I was like 150. And then the studio was only going for 400 and I was able to rent that out for 500. So 100, so 400, 500 is 100, 600 to now it's, I have it for 740 right now. So I'm at 240 and then I'm about to have the three bedroom rented out. It's on the market right now for 1250 and that's because it's through Section 8. So that's another 300. So around $500-$600 more in the last year and a half, a month, I've been able to max out on that place. And what I did as well is I also refinanced it just like you did, saved me another $100 a month. So that's actually $1,200 a year. So it's awesome. The cool thing I like about real estate is, and what I've been able to learn a lot from this triplex is this, you could buy the house and it could be an okay deal when you bought it. But if you start to look at different ways to maximize your income or efficiency, you can increase your cash flow or lower your expenses, which increases your cash flow. And so that's what we've done over the last 18 months or so. Increase the rents, refinance for a lower interest rate, which also increases our cash flow. And then we also started using Section 8 to secure income. Because one thing, like I think we've learned from COVID is insulating your business, securing, because people that have private jobs, more than likely, you know, I get fired, less hours, and then they can't take care of their rent. More than likely, they're going to buy groceries and make sure their kids have clothes for school. You know, rent's probably, which is weird, rent is the last thing on their mind. But when you have Section 8 or some type of subsidized housing vouchers, which we also, one of the tenants actually just signed up for, where it takes care of like 4 months of their rent, it forces you to get creative. And so that's what I like about it, because it's a lot of learning lessons. And so that's kind of the story with the triplex. With the duplex, we got shortly after that one, we bought for 138 and right now it's worth about 160. but we put money down on it. So we actually only have 101,000 left on it. So about 50, 55 grand, 60 grand of equity. And so with that one, we just had to kick out one of the other tenants, actually. So I'm actually currently doing a tenant turnover on that one, putting new flooring down, going to change the vanity. And everything else is just a wipe down and a paint over, because that place was newly renovated before the previous tenants. So that one cash flows. If both units are in there, it's going to cash flow. If one of the units is filled up, then it's only going to pay off just the mortgage, which is fine. At least for the multifamily, that's the goal I try to go for. At least one third or two thirds takes care of the mortgage and the rest is profit. Worst case scenario. But the goal is, because I know last interview we talked about commercial real estate, the goal is actually to sell both of those properties, the triplex and a duplex, and then go roll over into a 7 or 8 unit. I think it's about that time. I think we've learned as much as we could so far with those two properties. They're gonna cash flow what they are. I think I've maxed out on the cash flow with those properties, and so I want to plus up, but I also want to centralize. Driving to two different locations gets kind of crazy with our jobs that we have now, right? That's kind of the goal. Looking to see how the market's going to be, though. I know right now things are a bit inflated, but the plan is to make some minor changes, put a driveway in, maybe change the siding, stuff like that to increase the value. And then if I can get at least 120 grand in profit, I would like to 1031 exchange that profit into a 7 or 8 unit if it's still around when Joe Biden gets elected, because I hear the rumor is it might go away.
Let's take a quick break from today's episode to hear from our show sponsors. Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Mike Cav with Average Joe Finances. You know, we're living in some pretty tough times right now. And if you don't have life insurance, you should probably get it. You need to protect yourself, protect your family, and protect what you own. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description. Hey, what's going on everybody? It's Mike Cav from Average Joe Finances. Just want to talk to you today about Prep Agent. If you're interested in learning how to become a real estate agent and being able to pass the test on your first try, check out Prep Agent. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description. Welcome back, everybody. Let's get back into it.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. I mean, it was mentioned in the past, but there really hasn't been a focus on it. So we'll see. There's some strong, you know, lobbying groups trying to fight that. And I don't know. There's some people that are adamant that it's going to happen. There's some people that think that there's no chance it'll happen. So, you know, just got to play it by ear. And then if not, you know, then we got to work with what the current environment is, right? You know, for you though, out there in the Seven Cities area out there in Hampton Roads, you know, commercial real estate's pretty tough. So my buddy and I were actually looking at partnering up and buying an apartment complex out there. And it's just the prices, and this is a discussion we had on the phone literally 2 days ago, like this one that we were looking at, it's $1 million and it's a 12 unit, but for what it rents out and the size of the apartments, like it's definitely overinflated in value. So
yeah.
Where you look at something for that price range in like the Midwest, and you're talking about a 30, 40, you know, unit apartment for $1 million. And
exactly,
they're all renting at like $600-$800 a pop, you know, so you're making your money, you know, and so their cost average per apartment is about, you know, 45 to 50,000, where the ones that we were looking at out here or out there in Virginia is like 85,000 per apartment. And it's just, yeah, it's really, it can be very difficult. So when you're looking at the commercial real estate, find the ma and pop that are just ready to get out of the business and they just want to fully retire. And that's probably where you're going to find your best deal. Because other than that, man, that stuff's really overly inflated. But I'm hoping that you can, you know, do a 1031 exchange when you sell those properties to do that. That would be phenomenal. Just be prepared. Just make sure you know the rules of that, right? You know, it's, and again, I'm not a tax professional or anything like that, but It's 40, yeah. 45 days. You have to have the three properties named that you want to look at. And then after that, you have 6 months to close on them. And that sounds like a lot of time, but on a commercial deal, you know, 6 months is not a lot of time when it comes to, you know, the different ways that it can go. So yeah, it can get,
it's really
it
not actually
sketchy. So
I've seen even the big guys, like they're on like YouTube and social media. Hey guys, if you have a deal, please send me a deal. I'm closing in on my time frame, please. You know, I'll do a giveaway. If you could just find me a deal.
Yeah. Because you know, they need to dump that money into something, and otherwise they lose that tax benefit and they got to come out of pocket, you know?
So yeah, it's a big tax. And my backup plan. So kind of my backup plan, I just learned this from one of my interviews, and I haven't had the chance to really look into what the paperwork side of it is. Cause usually when I get told any tax deferral or any loophole when it comes to real estate, I like to look at the skinny on like what it actually, the actual process, I guess that's like the PS in me. But I was interviewing this lady and she was telling me about how she seller finances. I'm like, okay, cool. Know about seller financing. She says, but what I use is I do HELOCs in my seller financing properties to fund my deals. And I was like, I never thought about that. Cause yeah, that house is paid off. So I never thought about using the equity in the home in order to fund other deals. I just thought about the fact that seller financing is a good way to get into buying a property because obviously less restrictions than going through a bank.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually looking at doing a HELOC on my primary residence out here just to, you know, invest into more real estate and get more cash flow. But it's the lenders right now, it's very tough to get approved for a HELOC or, you know, just... The restrictions are pretty heavy right now. So you got to find a big lender that'll do it. And then mine, the one that I was looking at said that they'll only go off on my tax assessment, which isn't as high as what my property value is. And they said, well, we'll only come out and do an appraisal if you're going to do a HELOC for $250,000 or more. I'm like, well, I wanted to borrow $200,000. So, you know, $250,000, I don't know if I borrowed $250,000, if you came out and appraised my house, I don't know if it would meet that criteria. I think I would meet 200 easily, but I think above that, I don't think it's going to happen. So they were like, well, sorry, we can only go off your tax assessment then. So I'm like, well, all right, whatever. I guess that's not going to work for now. So I'll wait till I get a little more equity in here before I do that, or wait until they, you know, raise the tax assessment here, which is going to happen every year. It's consistently going up. So we'll see. But one of the beautiful things about being in Hawaii is it's the lowest tax, you know, rate in the nation. I'm curious if that's going to change because the lack of tourism since the pandemic happened. I have a feeling all the homeowners out here are about to take a big shot. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's the hard part too.
Yeah.
Come January, a lot of people are going to be either probably foreclosing, the deferments maybe in question, and a lot of the tenants are no longer be safeguarded by the government. I know a lot of landlords can't wait for that.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, you know, you know, any landlord that's taken advantage of somebody that's not cool, but at the same time, you have to look at, you know, you bought the property, you have a mortgage you have to pay. So, you know, the rent needs to come in. And so actually I had an issue with one of my tenants, right. That owed me about 6 months worth of rent at $1,000 per month. So he owed me $6,000. And I actually found a program in Virginia that had money from the CARES Act that will pay their rent for them and all their back paid rent, late fees and everything. So I submitted them for the program and then sent him the paperwork and said, hey man, fill this out. We'll get this, you know, sent in and get you taken care of. So come January, you know, you're safer now because your rent's paid and I don't have to sit here and start the eviction process. And even though I don't want to do it, you know, because of the situation that everybody's facing, but at the same time, if I'm not getting the rent, it's making it difficult to pay for everything, right? So got him set up with this program, and then the state is now cutting me a check for his back paid rent. And I thought that was pretty awesome. So there's creative ways to help out your tenants if you can. And for the landlords, it'll take the time to do that. You know, I commend you because I can tell you that it was definitely a process and it was a lot of work on my end to make that happen. But at the same time, you're helping other people out because whether you're a landlord or you're a tenant, you know, bottom line is we're all human, right? And we should be taking care of each other the best that we can. You know, I don't want to, you know, take from my family because, you know, to, or take away food from our table. But at the same time, I managed to find a way to not do that and help this other family out. So, you know, there's creative ways to do it. As long as you do the research and look up the program, you can generally find something that can help. So,
yeah. And the key thing right now, and I feel like if you can make it through this as an investor, landlord, then you should be able to make it when things get better.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started your journey, you said back in 2015, right? I'm kind of getting back on topic here. So your personal finance.
Personal finance. Yeah.
And then when did you start investing in real estate? You said that was about 2 years ago?
2019.
Okay. So just last year. Okay. So recently, like me, right? And, you know, one of the reasons why this is Average Joe Finances is because, you know, I just got started out and I'm sharing my journey as I go along. And the same thing, like, so, you know, I'm glad to have somebody else that's kind of new with just starting out. Cause a lot of people that I interview have been doing this for a long time and they're already set, you know, they've got everything going on. You're just starting out on your journey, just like me. And to be able to share your experience, man, this is awesome. Because now I've got another quote unquote average Joe on with me right now to talk about, how you're getting to where you're getting. So I think that's really neat. So that kind of answers the question that I like to ask about how long you've been doing this. But now I want to ask you throughout everything, whether it's the real estate, the stocks, just the way you were able to save and get out of debt, what do you enjoy the most? Like what brings you the most gratification since you got started on this journey?
So I would say recently what brings me the most joy is sharing information, because I realize how much I love the real estate community because we're so eager to share. And so what I've gotten the most joy out of is just providing information to those that, hey, I didn't know that this was possible. You know, there's people that real estate investors I know that didn't invested for 8 years and didn't know, oh, let me do Section 8, you know, or products that provide that use less water or less heat for your house so that either your tenant saves energy or you save energy. Because at the end of the day, the goal is to strive to not just not only save you money, but also save your residents or your tenants money as well. The more money you save them, the more likely they'll pay the rent. So it's still a win-win. So that has been the most enjoyable process for me. And I think it's kind of going to be like a infinite thing, to be honest, because there's so many new things that I'm learning on a day-to-day basis. And I've seen people that do it for 20 years, they're still learning things as well. Because there's always a different way to go about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so since I started learning my whole process and everything, I was like, hey, I'm going to share this with other people because, you know, when you go out there, financial education, it's not scarce, right? There's a lot out there. There's a lot of information you can find out there. But the thing is, a lot of people don't take the time to really go out there and research. So I started my blog to start putting the information out there of the stuff that I was doing. I said, hey, this worked for me. Maybe it'll work for you, you know, check it out. And then after that, I was like, you know, I really wanted to start doing a podcast because I listened to a bunch of podcasts and I'm like, you know, this is a great way to get some information out there. And I was going to wait till I got out of the Navy to do it. But a buddy of mine that started a podcast while he was still in, and it's done really well. And it's a different style. Like it's not personal finance, but it's about like, you know, just life goals and personal coaching and just overall wellness in life. And he told me, he's like, hey, Mike, just get started. Just do it. Start right now. And, you know, whether it's, if you could do, you know, one episode a month, whatever, do it. If you could do one every 2 weeks or one a week, do it. If you do one every day, do it. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, well, I'll do one a week if I can keep doing that. So that's what I started doing. So I do one episode a week and it started off with like my first couple episodes was about me and what I was doing and my journey on, you know, in personal finance and financial freedom and, you know, how I was getting there. And then I started bringing on guests to share what they're doing. And it's just been an awesome experience to have this wealth of knowledge, right? So I get very selfish with the podcast in the fact that I get to invite, you know, other investors on and other people that are doing really well that would normally not give me the time of day to sit there and talk with them just to have a conversation. But now I get them on a podcast and they get to share, you know, what they're doing with other people and potentially other investors that can invest with them. You know, so I look at this as an opportunity. Well, hey, I'm putting you out there. I'm going to help you advertise yourself. But at the same time, I get to learn from you. We get to have this conversation. And that's why I enjoy doing the podcast the way I do it. It's just like it's almost as if you and I were sitting down having a cup of coffee and just hanging out, you know, just talking real estate and investing. And like you said too, even before we started, we talked for like 30 minutes just having a conversation, because when you get two like-minded people in a room, or in this case, in a Zoom, you can just sit there and have a conversation forever, right? My wife and kids are probably downstairs wondering when the heck I'm going to come down there, because I usually schedule these for an hour. And since we talked for a while beforehand, they're like, man, where's this guy? What's going on?
Yeah.
But you know, the conversation, when it's good, you just keep going. It's a good source material to have when you have two like-minded people, you know, spitting out some good info. I definitely appreciate that. And, you know, I appreciate, you know, what it is you're doing and how you enjoy it, you know, and just the, there's definitely some gratification that comes with putting the information out there and helping educate people. So with everything you're doing with your podcast, you know, I think it's awesome. I listen to all your episodes as well. I'm subscribed. You have some great content. You've had some great guests on there, including yours truly. You know, it was probably the best interview you've ever done, even though my mic sucked that day. But excuse me, off the soapbox. But anyway, no, seriously, the fact that you have a passion for it, right? I feel like, you know, you and I are very like-minded when it comes to this, and it's all about getting the information out there and helping other people. There's really nothing better than that, if you ask me, you know? Sorry, I ramble when it comes to that.
No.
I get passionate and excited, you know?
I'm equally as passionate. And you just reminded me of something before I forget. One thing I saw Bigger Pockets do was, you know how you've been posting your episodes on YouTube? They make blog posts about their podcast episodes. So
yeah, I'm actually going to get started doing that. Another podcaster friend of mine was telling me about how they do it, because I asked him, I said, hey, full disclosure here, man, like, how do you get all this info and turn it into a blog post? Like, how are you getting all the transcription of your podcast? And he told me about this website called otter.ai, and it was something we were talking about before we started the interview. To get this out there for other podcasters, this is a great tool to use to transcribe your podcast. And yeah, so I'm actually testing that out right now, and I might start doing like an actual blog post with the podcast. I see a lot of podcasters doing that, and there's some really good reception, because, you know, people can listen to the podcast and read the blog post at the same time and kind of follow along. And, you know, for some people, you can help, they can absorb the information better that way. So
yeah,
it's definitely something I want to look at.
Yeah. I liked it because they may not find me on YouTube, but maybe they found me on the internet through the blog, the blog post. And then they click on the HTML and they see that it's the, there's the video of this episode with all the, you know, so let me click on that. It's because some people like to see people talking and the interacting portion. So I definitely going to try that. Obviously the main, you know, key thing is just time, because I need to start putting together my videos, because I have like, now I probably have about 20 episodes that I need to just download as far as episode video content. And that's I've been learning a lot when it comes to marketing. I'm like, when it comes to this marketing, branding, and just putting out quality content. And I've seen the difference between the two. We're trying to share good knowledge. You've seen me when I post my blogs on the Facebook group pages. And I've actually gotten some great reception and subscribers through that process, because I see people post so much stuff up there sharing their stories. I always assume that my biggest assumption that I'm annoyed with myself that I thought like this was, oh, it's Burr and Vest. So it's a bunch of professionals up there. So whatever I have to say probably wouldn't help. But actually, that's not the case. Some of the things that I've learned in my journey, or some of the things I've researched, actually did help or will help people. So you never know. Don't sell yourself short when it comes to putting out content. And one thing also too, because I'm glad you brought up about, hey, just put out the website thing, or just put it out there, because I had somebody I interviewed and I was telling her I was waiting to do 30 blog posts before I do put my website out there, because apparently Google considers your website mature when you have 30 posts. And she says, just put it out there ugly, and you'll figure it out as you go along. And it's good to learn that stuff now, because I may have took the time to make those 30 blog posts, and then it was like horrible keywords, and then my SEO sucks. And I've taken hundreds of hours to do these 30 blog posts. So I'm glad I listened to her, because it was actually helpful.
No, that's good stuff. All right, Anthony. So this conversation has been awesome. I really appreciate you sharing your story and everything you're doing. You know, with everything you're doing with Rich State of Mind as well, both the website that you got started up, the blog posts you're putting out, all the content, right? Your podcast. Really looking forward to when you launch your YouTube channel. That's gonna be sweet. Because I know, you know, the interviews that you've been doing, I know you've recorded some of that content. So just getting it out there on YouTube is going to be pretty awesome for you. So I'm pretty excited for what, you know, where you're headed. With that being said, where can people find more information about you? Do you have a website that you can share with us publicly, and also your social media?
Yeah. So people could find more information about me and my business partner, who's I have not done this alone. So I want to make that clear. Amira Anderson, who has been a godsend when it comes to real estate investing with me and building the business. So you can find out more about us on richstateofmind.com. You can see my personal Instagram, which is rich_invest_, or follow the Rich State of Mind Instagram, which is rich_statebrand, where you can see mostly posts about our blogs or about the apparel that we have. We have a lot of inspirational t-shirts, real estate niche type t-shirts, and wealth building. And so that's where you find a lot about us on. And then also the podcast, which is actually on the website as well. So really, if you type in richstateofmind.com/podcast, you will see on our website.
All right, right on. So there you have it, folks. We'll make sure we have that in the show notes. So it'll be easier for you. Instead of having to type it up, you could just click and just make sure you have all of Anthony and Amira's information. Side note, I've actually known Amira for a very long time. Her and I were on the Kearsarge together, which was my very first command in the Navy. So it's really funny how the world works and how we all got connected. And, you know, the Navy might be large, but I'm telling you, when you're in it, it's a small Navy, you know,
so it's crazy.
So yeah, and a small world in general. But hey, Anthony, absolute pleasure having you on, brother. I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at AverageJoeFinances.com.